I switched on the bulb and gazed with interest at the glistening, coloured tapestry in the depths of his eye. "Very pretty. I could write you a certificate of soundness." He laughed and thumped my shoulder. "Good. I'm glad to hear it. I always fancied I had a touch of cataract in that one." He began to show me the large animal instruments which hung from hooks on the walls. Docking and firing irons. Bloodless castrators, emasculators, casting ropes and hobbles, carving ropes and hooks. A new, silvery embryotomy hung in the place of honour. But many of the instruments, like the drugs, were museum pieces. Particularly the bloodstick and phleam, a relic of medieval times, but still used to bring the rich blood spouting into a bucket. "You still can't beat it for laminitis," Farnham declared seriously. We finished up in the operating room with its bare white walls, high table, oxygen, an ether anaesthetic outfit, and a small steriliser. "Not much small animal work in this district," Farnham smoothed the table with his palm. "But I'm trying to encourage it. It makes a pleasant change from lying on your belly in a cowhouse. The thing is, we've got to do the job right. The old castor oil and prussic acid doctrine is no good at all. You probably know that a lot of the old hands won't look at a dog or a cat. But the profession has got to change its ideas." He went over to a cupboard in the corner and opened the door. I could see glass shelves with a few scalpels, artery forceps, suture needles, and bottles of catgut in spirit. He took out his handkerchief and flicked at an oroscope before closing the doors carefully. "Well, what do you think of it all?" he asked as he went out into the passage. "Great," I replied. "You've got just about everything you need here. I'm really impressed." He seemed to swell visibly. The thin cheeks flushed, and he hummed softly to himself. Then he burst loudly into song in a shaky baritone, keeping time with our steps as we marched along. Back in the sitting room, I told him about Bert Sharp. Something about boring out a cow which was going on three cylinders. He talked about her ewer and felon. I didn't quite get it. Farnham laughed. "Well, I think I can translate. He wants a Hudson's operation doing on a blocked teat. Ewer is the udder, and felon, the local term for mastitis." "Well, thanks. Oh, and there was a deaf Irishman, a Mr. Mulligan." "Wait a minute." Farnham held up a hand. "Let me guess. Vomiting?" "Aye, vomiting bad, sir." "Right. I'll put up another pint of bismuth carb for him. I'm in favour of long-range treatment for this dog. He looks like an Airedale, but he's as big as a donkey and has a moody disposition. He's had Joe Mulligan on the floor a few times. Just gets him down and worries him when he's got nothing better to do. But Joe loves him." "Well, how about the vomiting?" "That doesn't mean a thing. Natural reaction from eating every bit of rubbish he finds. Well, we better get out to Sharp's, and there are one or two other visits. How about coming with me and I'll show you a bit of the district?" Outside the house, Farnham motioned me towards a battered Hillman, and as I moved round to the passenger side, I shot a startled glance at the treadless tyres, the rusty bodywork, the almost opaque windscreen with its network of fine cracks. What I didn't notice was that the passenger seat was not fixed to the floor, but stood freely on its sledge-like runners. I dropped into it and went over backwards, finishing with my head on the rear seat and my feet against the roof. Farnham helped me up, apologising with great charm, and we set off. Once clear of the marketplace, the road dipped quite suddenly, and we could see all of the dales stretching away from us in the evening sunshine. The outlines of the great hills were softened in the gentle light, and a broken streak of silver showed where the Darrow wandered on the valley floor. Farnham was an unorthodox driver. Apparently captivated by the scene, he drove slowly down the hill, elbows resting on the wheel, his chin cupped in his hands. At the bottom of the hill, he came out of his reverie and spurted to 70 miles an hour. The old car rocked crazily along the narrow road, and my movable seat slewed from side to side as I jammed my feet against the floorboards. Then he slammed on the brakes and pointed out some pedigree shorthorns in a field, and then jolted away again. He never looked at the road in front. All his attention was on the countryside, around and behind him. It was that last bit that worried me, because he spent a lot of time driving fast and looking over his shoulder at the same time.